BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Back in the day, nation-state hackers did the digital work of classic espionage, gathering state secrets, disrupting critical systems. But a lot has changed. It used to be they were after data and devices, but now they're after you. And to get to you, they game and hack the algorithms powering social media.
Actual effects is very difficult. You know, there's no test and control group study to know what would the 2016 election or the 2020 election look like. What would the Brexit campaign look like with and without Russian interference? I can point to some effects I know they've had, though. They have sown distrust in institutions. They have sown doubt in one another.
I'm Gabriella Coleman, a professor of anthropology at Harvard, and this is The Hackers, a series that delves into the hidden histories of hacking and uncovers how it shaped the world as we know it. In this episode, we're discovering how nation-state hackers manipulate social media to manipulate us.
My name is Darren Linville. I'm an associate professor in the Department of Communication and lead researcher in the Clemson University Media Forensics Hub.
Darren and his colleagues have done intensive data-driven investigations into so-called troll farms, organizations that are focused on exploiting social media users across the globe. So give us a picture of this kind of operation.
There are different types of troll farms. There are, of course, state-affiliated, state-sponsored troll farms like the Internet Research Agency run out of St. Petersburg. And a troll farm like that is, for all intents and purposes, a large marketing company. They have been recorded to have had hundreds of employees. They have dozens of individuals that just sit and make posts all day. But, you know, they also have a human resources department. They have an art department. And then other places you have troll farms that do that same sort of work, but, you know, for for-profit companies. Or they'll just work for all comers, you know, whoever's willing to pay the bills.
When did they start operating?
The Russian Internet Research Agency got their start as far back as 2013. And they started in Russian and Ukrainian, communicating to audiences in those languages. But they quickly pivoted to realize that they could use some of these same tactics to target Westerners, especially in NATO-aligned countries.
Initially, they were using tactics that had been successful in Russia and Ukraine. Fake news reports, Salmonella outbreak in New York, Ebola in Atlanta. But that didn't land with the English-speaking audience. There's a level of trust in the media here, and we can tell fact from fiction. Well, in most cases. This was classic KGB style, really. A bit blunt and outdated.
And then sometime in 2015, it's really apparent the IRA brought in some consultants. And they switched to more operating like a marketing company.
Basically, they became chameleons.
They started creating these accounts that were really artisanal in their creation, that integrated themselves into very specific communities. On the right, they started creating accounts that started to support Donald Trump, pro-Second Amendment, pro-gun, and they were the most extreme version of a right-wing American. And then on the left, they did the same thing in the opposite direction. And a lot of their accounts over time started to specifically use a tactic that's been called digital blackface, where they pretended to be Black Americans and integrate themselves into those communities. In fact, the Internet Research Agency in 2017 was running one of the most successful Black Lives Matter organizations on social media. It had a website. They had Facebook, Instagram, Twitter accounts. They even were conducting events in the real world through this organization. And they were running these accounts with digital blackface all the way through 2020.
The aim was to sow discord, but they didn't do it by being hostile.
Now, that's not to say that they were saying things that were nice. They were saying things that the people that followed them agreed with.
We are talking really sophisticated acting to integrate themselves into very specific communities, Oscar-worthy. When they could convince people they were real, it was really impactful.
In 2019, there was an account called Polite Melanie that was purporting to be a Black woman. She actually won the Chicago Tribune's Tweet of the Week contest in October of 2019 for a joke she was making about Donald Trump. The specific tweet was, "Making fun of Donald Trump in a book is unfair. It's like making fun of the Amish on television." And she was getting followers hand over fist. She was quoted in Washington Post and CNN articles. She had a Scary Mommy blog written about one of her posts. She was building up a great deal of influence and tens of thousands of followers in a very short amount of time. But it was because she was giving her audience what they wanted. And then she was able to use that influence to pull them along in a very specific agenda. Specifically, what the Russians did with a lot of these digital blackface accounts was to push support towards Bernie Sanders, both in 2016 and 2020. They were also trying to integrate themselves within the LGBTQ community, within Latino America, again, to push Bernie Sanders in these communities that, you know, maybe he hadn't traditionally been as successful with.
This wasn't really about boosting one candidate over another. It was divide and conquer. It happened on the left and the right, brewing animosity on all sides.
The more we're arguing amongst ourselves, the less we're focusing on whatever it is that the Russians might be doing.
Social engineering 101. This is a tactic that was used in the past by hackers to fish information from people in order to facilitate technical hacking. Now things have been flipped.
Would you say these kind of troll farms and what they're doing, is this about hacking people rather than gaining information or disrupting systems?
I think that's a great way of putting it. You could say it's about hacking people. Again, go back to what the Russians were doing before both 2016 and 2020 election. It wasn't just about their words. Before the 2016 election, they switched to mostly retweeting other people. They were trying to make very specific other accounts that were already saying maybe something they agreed with, make those accounts appear more prominent, make those accounts appear more legitimate than they may have otherwise appeared, and give Americans a sort of false perception of what other Americans actually believed and what we ourselves perhaps actually believed. That is a form of hacking people, to pull us along in an ideological direction that maybe psychologically we wanted to go that direction, but they're going to give us the push.
That collective push is nudging at scale, subtly driving a conversation towards extremes. Even if the professional troll hackers were discovered and removed from the platform, they have already succeeded in turning real social media users into a kind of organic worm, propagating chosen messages, ideas, or emotions along human networks and causing immense damage.
Oftentimes, it's real stories, but it's the real information that certain actors want us to spread. So one example is the doxing of particular real individuals on social media. Specifically, doxing people for engaging in racist behavior.
You might have heard the term Karen, referring to white women of a certain age screeching at retail staff or harassing people due to the color of their skin. Well, the Internet Research Agency knew a trend when they saw one.
There's a couple of examples where they were the very first people to tweet about some of this activity. They were the very first accounts to really give some of these stories traction. So one specific one was Taco Truck Tammy. It was actually the Russians that named Taco Truck Tammy, Taco Truck Tammy. Taco Truck Tammy was a woman in Austin, Texas, who had a taco truck parked in front of her house. And there was video of her coming out and yelling at them, telling them to leave and saying that she was gonna call ICE if they didn't leave immediately. And the story of Taco Truck Tammy became an important regional story for a couple of days. It was all over the Dallas Morning Sun and the Austin American Statesman and local news in Texas. There was no election happening in the summer of 2019. So the Russians were definitely looking for a way to inflame existing racial tensions and given the, you know, really small amount of effort it took on their part, you have to give them credit that it worked.
Human beings are vulnerable. Human brains are vulnerable. Human behavior is vulnerable. But still, these agents are able to target the weakest spots in the same way a traditional hacker targets flaws in software.
If you look at research done on both Facebook and Twitter, the baby boomer generation are 7 or 8 times more likely to spread fake news than my students are. That suggests to me that they're vulnerable. Older Americans grew up in a time when if it was in print, it was true. And that, you know, in a world of disinformation, in a world of fake news, that poses a problem. My students, of course, have the opposite problem. They grew up in a world where they were told they were constantly being lied to. And so they don't know what information to trust. We've got to address both of these issues.
But it's not just humans. There's a fundamental weakness in social media that puts us all at risk. The algorithm that shows us what we want to see again and again and again.
Social media is fundamentally created as a dopamine machine. You know, we keep going back to that machine for our hit of dopamine. And it is that dopamine that helps spread disinformation. We want to believe things that reinforce our existing beliefs. And if we face something that challenges those beliefs, we are much, much more likely to dismiss it because cognitive dissonance is a powerful force.
This may have come to our attention because the trolls were targeting Western countries, but the problem is global.
One of the most important things to point out is that there are dozens of countries that engage in social media disinformation. The bulk of inauthentic activity is happening in languages other than English. If you look in Latin America, Venezuela continues to run a lot of inauthentic accounts that have been operating for months and years in some cases. And I think that's probably one of the biggest take-homes is that most disinformation run by other countries isn't targeting the West at all. They're targeting their own people. At the end of the day, especially authoritarian regimes, they care about controlling their own people more than they care about controlling Americans or British or Westerners in general. I fear what might be coming next. I fear for-profit companies using more and more of these tactics. I fear these tactics being used more and more in languages that the platforms are not paying attention to. I fear autocrats continuing to use these tactics to control the populations of their own countries. And the microscope that we are giving this issue here in the United States, not even looking that direction. That's what I fear.
This situation is really tough with no easy solution. Researchers like Darren and his colleagues are keeping constant vigil to identify bad actors. But even if platforms have taken some action, it's mostly in the West, and it's still not enough. There are a few things we could do, but it would take full disclosures of algorithmic systems and far more access to other data. Companies are reluctant to hand over data that's critical to their bottom line. Even if an army of gray hat hackers came up with the fixes, who's to say the social media giants would take them? But at least we know the problem. A lot of earlier propaganda wasn't uncovered for decades. We understand the nature of the beast at some level, and that means whether we need to make ourselves hack-proof or regulate the hell out of the social media companies, the time to act is now.